Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomo. Jimmy on the board for a bit until Matt Byrne shows up. Then he's going to wander over here and be our sports guest. We have S&P futures up 26, NASDAQ futures up 142 as we continue to celebrate something. We're not sure what, but we're going up every day and we don't seem to care about valuations anymore. Not sure that's a bad thing. If you're long, it sure as hell isn't. But I was just going through a few and you got big companies, real big companies pushing 12, 13 times revenue and 40, 50 times PE. Historically, that's pretty high. I don't know if the market is anticipating even more types of money coming into the system or something, but clearly something is afoot. Not sure what that is, but anyway, we have that going on. We seem to have a couple of more deals with other people, and now they're saying that we're supposed to have things like send us a note and we'll figure out whether we have a deal with you or things like that. And I've never come across anything like this before, but this makes it hard to value. It really does. And so it's you think we're going to keep going up every day, which we have been, and yet you wonder how long in the valuation can it go. Then you see things like Bitcoin, which keep going up no matter what, so it becomes a question of money then. Are we going to really push more money into the system? If we do, what are we going to do to the average person? I think we know what the answer to that is, and do we care? And who's the we? And again, these enough questions, Jimmy, or what?
They are. They're tough questions. We will find out. I just know in my neighborhood, a lot of for sale signs are out. So we will be interested to find out from Nancy today what exactly is going on in the housing market. Is it strong enough?
I think it's kind of all local in that regard. But some people are looking at some of these valuations, and it's the one thing. I don't know if anybody people listening to the show feel the same way, but it's really all the same subject. You have to look at what is your view of the world going forward. And what, if you buy a house at a certain level, is it one income that can handle it? Is it two that can handle it? If you're going to have a family, can you maintain two? Can you both grow? What about taxes going up? What about this going up? Just because you can fix one of the payments, which a lot of people did at 3% or even maybe a little lower, can you fix the rest of them? What about a repair? What if a repair cost 40% more than you thought 5 years from now? Can you cover it? God help you if you have a couple of dogs and they have vet problems. Did anybody budget that? Because now you can go to a vet and spend a grand there easy. Vet visits used to be like $20. Now that's not the case anymore. I mean, there's things that you don't even think about that come and nip at you, and it's all part of degradation of currency, which for whatever reason, very few people seem to get. If you were around at all during the last thing and went to school anywhere near that time, it's as obvious as the nose on your face. Yet, I never heard anybody talk about it, and it's kind of a crazy situation. But, Jimmy, one of the things we were kind of kicking around a little bit yesterday is one of my favorite players, Dave Parker, died at 74, which is, you know, hey, people die. It's not like it's a shocker, but why don't you grab Matt and I'll keep talking.
Yes, Chief. He died of Parkinson's. Hold on.
No, but the scary part is that he's going into the Hall of Fame next month. Now, I think he was very deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. I have no idea what the hang-up was, why he hung around until he was 74 before he got in there by the Veterans Committee. He never got more than like 24% of the vote. I have no idea why that could be. The guy was a 9-time All-Star. The World Series team was a spectacular player to watch. I don't understand what, I think, as maybe we're seeing in government, any kind of power you give anybody can be, what's the term, all power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think we're seeing that and have seen it through, pretty much all of my lifetime. And we're seeing with these baseball writers, it's really scary when you think of what, for those that don't, the first way to get into the Hall of Fame is by being voted in by the Baseball Writers of America. These are people that have cover baseball, and I don't know how you get the certification for being in this group, but they cover baseball, and you have to have covered it within like the last 10 years or something like that. But there's some, the numbers of people that are in there, you know, go back and forth from time to time, and then they had what they call a Veterans Committee that is now split up into like 3 or 4 subcommittees. There's the older, what do they call them, the legacy players, Jimmy, or something?
Yes, the legacy, because Dick Allen got in as well now with Dave Parker. He died of Parkinson's.
Yeah.
I'm going to come on in. Hold on.
We have a, so he comes in like Dick Allen was one of those guys that rubbed the press the wrong way. So finally he got in, I think, wait till Jimmy sits down. I think Dick Allen was, Jimmy, was Dick Allen dead when he didn't show up. I think he was already deceased when he went in. Ron Santo, I know, was.
Dick Allen was, he had passed a while ago, I think in 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, and then you look at this, the Hall of Baseball Hall of Fame inductees, and talk about people that seem to have, give anybody any kind of power. I just, bothers a little bit of Jesus out of me. He's there, we can probably tell when I talk about people in business, I think have too much power, people in politics. The first class of the Hall of Fame, 1936, and none of us were around, was, these are probably 5 guys that you can't really have a bitch about. Ty Cobb, Walter Johnson, Christy Mathewson, Babe Ruth, and Honus Wagner. Not one of them was unanimous. So you sit there and go, I'm going to show up, I want to be one of these baseball writers, and I'm going to vote no to Babe Ruth. What goes in somebody's mind like that, Jimmy?
I don't know. I guess it's that if you do it, it's more on the, no one can be perfect.
I guess.
You're going on the thought that nobody was the perfect baseball player. You know, even though when you take a look at it, and as we discussed yesterday about Lou Gehrig, was the other one besides Mariano Rivera that got in.
Well, there was no official count.
There was no official count. So no one wanted to tell a guy that was about to die, or that, oh, you can't get in, even though you put up historic numbers. You know, he was an Iron Man while he played and going forward, but it was just sort of, it was almost like, Chief, no one wanted to say, well, you know, I object.
Well,
maybe not this time, or he'll get in, but not perfect.
Well, the next year, 1937, had another pretty serious clap. Who's this guy? I don't remember. Knapp, LaJoie. How do you pronounce it? LaJoie.
I think that's correct. Yes.
Tris Speaker, and Cy Young. Cy Young, 76% of the votes. Tris Speaker, obviously the greatest center fielder ever, right? I mean, in terms of, when I say that, I don't think he's, if you put him out there today, I don't think he's good, better than Pete Crowe-Armstrong or Willie Mays or anybody. But the fact is, the dude averaged, over the course of a year, what did he average more than any other center fielder, like 40 or 50 more chances?
I believe you're correct. I'd have to take a look at that.
Now, you can look at fielding in two ways. You look at the amount of errors, which means the amount of balls a guy gets to and muffs, or the balls hit at him and muffs, or throws bad or something like that. Or you can figure out how many balls he got that other people didn't get, which is very difficult to do in today's world because nobody plays 160 games, or in those days, 154. Well, I guess there's a few people that play almost all the games, but there's not very many that play them all. So when you looked at a guy like Ryan Sano and you said, well, gee, he looks pretty good at third base, if you looked at the amount of chances he had versus other teams, every year he'd have like 20 or 30 or 40 more balls that he got to. Chances meaning attempts that you made where you made the play and didn't make an error. Well, the errors are one piece, but how many did you get to is another piece, right?
Correct.
You could be a center fielder and never make an error and never move, right?
That if the balls hit to you, that is correct.
I mean, so how did that guy only get Cy Young? they named the award after 76% of the votes. What the hell? And this goes on all the way through. I mean, I just when you talk about, you know, the things on the show, whether it's business, whether it's sports, whether it's politics, it's all people. And people can be very weird. and when you get somebody who's really true blue, as the Yiddish used to call a mensch, I don't know how many people turns that name, it's somebody who is very learned, very honest, and people can always count on him to help them out or something along those lines. I don't know what the Yiddish definition of it is, but that's very difficult to be. And there's not a whole lot of people. You know, Carl Hubbell, 87%. But even people that people would think of today, let me get up here to... Joe DiMaggio, 88%. You know, how do you vote against Jolton Joe? Forget it. Jackie Robinson, 77. Bob Feller, 93. So somebody had a vote against Bob Feller. You know what's weird though, Jimmy? Some years the vote's like 200 and some. The next year it's 124. The amount of people in the Baseball Writers Association go up and down that much? They must.
Apparently, yes.
Ted Williams, 93% of the vote. Who the hell voted against Ted Williams? The only thing stopping him from the best statistics ever was two stints in the Army or the Air Force, right? I mean,
correct.
How do you vote against the guy? I don't even... Stan Musial, I'm going to say, arguably over a long period of time, you know, one of the top five hitters ever in baseball and a terrific human being, 93%. Ernie Banks was... Or Lou Boudreau, 77, barely got in. Let's see, who else we got? Yogi Berra, I mean, how many All-Star games was the guy on teams, and how many World Series the guy win? 83% of the vote. 85. How do you vote against Yogi Berra? I just, it's astounding to me. Anyway, so Dave Parker is going in, people that we, Ernie Banks, 83%, first ballot. But you look at this thing here, I'm going to say two-thirds of the people were put in from the Veterans Committee. Dave Parker never got what? Never got more than 24% of the vote?
I apparently not. And, I mean, I looked at his statistics. I mean, he had a lifetime batting average of .290.
Which nobody has.
Right.
Very few people
exactly.
Have.
Which nobody has gone. And then, you know, I took a look at the All-Star, the famous play he made at the All-Star game. And it was funny because, you know, here it is. It's a... single to right, it's a high hopper, I don't know where it was, but it was on artificial turf. He picks it, he throws it, and he gets the guy out, and everyone gives Gary Carter credit for blocking the plate, which you can't do anymore.
Yeah.
But he hit Gary Carter on the fly and threw the guy out of the plate. Now, normally, a single to right, the guy scores.
Yep.
It was very interesting.
And he... was accused of doing some cocaine late in his career. Remember, we got out of his, and you know, and nobody wants to do that, you know. But then, the even I mean, looking at the red, the people that are Veterans Committee, you know, Bill Vec, but that's one of the there's one of the Veterans Committees is for the executives and like pioneers of the game. So Bill Vec in 1991. Leo DeRocher is in as a manager by Phil Rizzuto. But even lately, the people that are in by the Veterans Committee are Ron Santo. I don't see how he could possibly not have been in. And you've got Whitey Herzog, that's a manager. You've got, well, let's run this up some more. When did Dick Allen get in? Dick Allen, he just got in. He just got in. And well, here they got on the thing, they have Dave Parker living off to adjust that. Classic baseball, have Dick Allen, the classic baseball era, and then the Jim Leland got in, contemporary. Fred McGriff just got in, he's a good player. I mean, I don't understand where they get this whole mess where I don't see how Dan Mattingly's not in. Honestly, I don't see why Mark Grace doesn't have some. In an era where everybody was roided up except him, he had more hits than anybody else in the decade or something like that. And he had how many gold gloves? What do you got to do to get in, for God's sake?
Don't know. And he has a World Series. He won it with the Arizona.
Yeah.
He does check the boxes, Chief. I know. I just...
People say, oh, no. And then the bitch against Ryan Sandberg was that he's a second baseman with all these home runs. And he was a great second baseman, gold gloves. I heard one guy say he really should have been a third baseman. And as a third baseman, his power numbers weren't that good to get in as a third baseman, so he shouldn't be in there. Now, Brooks Robinson didn't have any power numbers, right? But he was so popular.
No, but he was a great third baseman.
Yeah.
I think it's this what it coulda, shoulda thing that, you know, Ryan had great numbers as a second baseman, but, oh, well, he should have played this.
Yeah, he should have played something. There's always something wrong with somebody.
You know, you got to find something. There's not the perfect baseball player out there.
Well, there's not the perfect human being out there. But I love reading the stuff in football where they'll say, you know, a number one draft pick, you know, strong at the point of attack, long arms, good pass blocker. Negatives, not so fast. So if he's chasing somebody after an interception, he's slow or something. Like that. Everybody's got to have a negative, right? No matter what it is, everybody's got to have a negative. Whatever he does, probably, but. So what do you make of the market going up every single day? Buy, baby, buy, or what?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, in Trump we trust.
Yeah. UK autos spared under U.S. tariff cut, but steel still in question. I will say this about our president. He is busy. This weekend he's all over these things where you go and look at for a new refrigerator, and it'll give you how many dollars per year the thing uses. He doesn't want to do that anymore. Not sure why. First of all, why would that even come to somebody's attention in that position? Somebody just decided they don't like it and he'd run it by him and he didn't like it, so he just blurts it out, or what? Why I can't imagine my idea of a president even worrying about something like that. But evidently he does.
According to now, Canada scrapped the digital service tax.
Yep.
It sounds like he has to pick a fight with somebody or something every day.
Well, this is the Energy Star ratings is what we're talking about.
Yes, I'm aware. You know, you go in and it tells you how efficient your washing machine is, your refrigerator, etc., the air conditioning unit, all of that. Yes. Fully aware.
Doesn't want any of that.
Why?
I don't know.
I mean,
I'm not sure why.
Because if it's made in the U.S., are you going to say that it is worse? You don't want to know people that your thing that you're buying is going to cost you more on the long run? I don't know.
Well, here's the Energy Star insight. An Energy Star inside U.S. homes is under attack from Trump. President Donald Trump has railed against modern dishwashers, washing machines, and other appliances since returning to the White House. Now he's turned his ire into an edict. Edict. It didn't sound good, did it? The Environmental Protection Agency is planning to eliminate the Energy Star program, a popular initiative that ranks appliances based on energy conservation and cost savings. If successful, consumers would face the risk of less efficient appliances entering an unregulated marketplace, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to know until you get the bill. When your electric bills are going absolutely to the moon everywhere, why this is not exactly the time to do this. Donald Trump is both a citizen and president, is railed against modern dishwashers, washing machines, light bulbs, showerheads, and toilets, claiming that onerous government regulations render them less effective and more expensive. I'm sure there's a bit of that in there. I didn't think that an Energy Star was necessarily a regulation. I thought it was just a test.
I think it is, in the sense that you know, we want things to be more efficient, more upfront, that if you're buying something, an appliance like that, you kind of know what your savings are or what your cost is, especially if it runs on electricity, you know?
I always found, well, the last few times I bought appliances, that the ones that were some of the cheaper ones, without all the gadgets on them, are the ones that are the best for the Energy Star. So I don't see how that's necessarily driving up costs.
No, I don't either, but you're probably right. I mean, the more things that you go on, I mean, nowadays you can buy a fridge that'll order groceries when it senses that you're down on milk, for example.
Well, some of the stuff with water conservation and standards and those kinds of things, I mean, I know if you grab a showerhead that has the filter in there that only allows a certain amount of water, the first thing people do is pull it out. And I guess you shouldn't have to buy that if you don't want it. I don't know how much it costs either. It can't be that much for the shower head. But, it, you know, it's just, I mean, what is, you know, you ask yourself, what is the job of the president? And maybe this is it. I don't, you know, I'm just, you know, I mean, I'm not, people think I'm giving all the answers. I'm not. I'm just asking the questions. I mean, is that what you want somebody to do? I don't mean it all day long. You just tell everybody what to do and whatever comes to your, whatever gut feel you have. It's like me going down the street and saying, boy, I don't like yellow cars. Do I sign an executive order banning yellow cars? I guess he would. I wouldn't. I'd say, well, maybe some people like yellow cars. Let them buy them.
It's a good question, Chief. I think that he likes being in the press, likes being in the media every day. And if he feels that something, you know, he has to say something to stay in the press. I mean, but you're president of the United States. You're in the press anyway. But, I guess he likes to have front page news all the time.
Well, let the record reflect that when I moved into my apartment a long time ago, my electric bill was probably $35. Now, this is an apartment, right? So not much electricity being used. You know, the fan for the furnace or the air conditioner, and it's by the lights. It's about it. I guess the TV. But so my bill was like $35. So they just come out with the fluorescent little squiggly bulbs that nobody wants you to use anymore, the fluorescents.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought some of those, and I replaced all of every bulb I used, which wasn't very many, with those things. And I managed to drop my bill down to $28. And of course, it worked its way back up to 35, then 38. And now the LED lights are probably a little more efficient, but I didn't replace everything with those. All as one goes out, you end up replacing them with them. Instead of 100 watts, you know, they're 7 or 9 or 12 or something. I mean, it makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, what's the point? Since the other ones, the extra wattage really just goes into heat. Well, now, my bill every month is in the 50s. So it's, even doing all that, it's still doubled. I bet if I went back to the regular light bulbs that did all the heat and everything, I bet I'd be up to 65 or so. So we're talking, you know, 2.5 times the bill in 16 years or so, 17 years. This in today's world, is these electric bills just keep going up and up and up. And the more you have people buying some of the power, like in the, well, I think the stuff that these guys are buying, these nuclear plants, two of them are turning back on, so they're not really affecting other people. But we continue to have more and more electrical demand, and we keep saying we can't use this and this and this. I mean, that whole argument is so insane to me. Okay, we're gonna triple. We're gonna make sure everybody has an electric car, but by the way, we're gonna, you know, and yet we're going to have all this electric. If you have a house, and when Nancy will talk about it when she comes in, you have a house with, you know, you think that people go out and buy these electric collectors and put them on the roof. They don't. There's companies that like lease them to you for 20 years, and then at the end of 20 years, they're yours. It's not really a lease. It's a it's a long-term financing, right, Jimmy?
Yes.
And Nancy had a closing, and we'll let her tell the story in detail. But the buyer said, I don't want those things. Well, it's a lien on your house. And the people owed like $22,000 or something to the company. So when the guy buying the place said, I don't want those things, the person selling the place had to come up with the $22,000 out of the closing to pay the guy off. It's not like people go out and spend, you know, $500 and you put two collectors up there and everything after that's yours. These things, people put this big stuff up there and they're all financed, right?
A lot of them are, unless you want to pay for it. And if you want to pay for it, it costs a lot more.
And I don't know how many people have done the math. The amount of money you pay these guys per year, if you actually save that much, I don't know if you do or not. Maybe you do.
It also depends on this. I know a while ago when my parents had a place out in California, the return on investment, meaning buying the panels, was 15 years. Now, California gets a lot of sun. We don't get as much sun as California, but it was a 15 year. It's why my father never did it. Now, California on new requires it on new construction.
That's insane.
Have solar panels.
I had a, still have a client. I haven't talked to him in a while. He has a, I think it's a farm. I mean, it's either a big piece of property west of the city. He ended up with, you don't see any of those anymore. The windmills that look like a big globe with the vents in them, so they just spin instead of the big, look like a Dutch. The other windmills, the you see where the big, propeller blades going around.
Right.
The other ones, what do you call those? The ones with the...
I don't know, because I've never honestly ever seen one.
But you've seen pictures of them.
Yes.
They look like a big globe, and when the wind goes by, it catches it and spins it. So it's another type of generator. He got one of those, and by the time he got subsidy from the state, subsidy from the government, it was worth it for him to put that in there, and he put a battery in there, and it powered all his lights around the property at night. So he was able to save up enough energy to where it was able to power up, I must have had a barn or something, but say he had 10 lights that he had on all night, and evidently it was enough to power all those. And during the day, I think maybe it kicked back to the grid a little bit. I don't know how much money you get for that, but he paid for it. He didn't get the things. Plus, they're really heavy on your roof. So you got to be worried about that as well. But it worked out for him. I don't think it would have worked out with all the subsidies and so forth. Anyway, SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 145. We had to break. Come back, Mr. John Flanagan.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
You'll get your chance, smart guy.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, we're up back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. Jim Lawler in studio. We should have Mr. Jeff Flanagan on the line here. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 143. Yet another day working our way up here. We have individual stacks. Goldman Sachs is up $19. That's interesting. We'll find out what that's all about. J.P. Morgan up 264. So somebody likes the banks here. Why not? They're sort of favorite child. Microsoft up 306, trading 499. And why not? I mean, these things up every single day. I was looking at Netflix up another $3 today. I've got Netflix at pushing 50 PE and 12.5-13 times revenue. I'm just going to lob that out there and make zero comment on it. I'm just going to lob it out there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 51.2%. Turbine maker Vestas down 5% on big, beautiful bill headwinds. Interesting on that. FTSE up, down 6, call that flat. Kekron up 1, call that flat. So very muted to slightly down over in Europe. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 336, another 0.8%. Hang Seng down to 11.9%. Shanghai up 20.6%. So kind of a mixed bag over there, which we've sort of been getting lately. I don't quite know why that is. Friday for wave review, guess what? We were up. Friday we were up 32 in the S&P. Only 105 in the NASDAQ, but we're up most of the day. Dow was up 432. Bonds today down 3 basis points, 4.25. So we've stopped this run up. I think it's because the Fed is putting money into the system. We'll see how long they do that and whether we get a bad inflation number or if we get a bad inflation number or somebody will ever tell the truth. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.58. Foreign exchange, the dollar is up a little bit today, but still the euro is at 117. It was 115 for a long time, so 117 is higher than it has been. British pound 137, it was 135 for the longest time. So dollar is somewhat weaker, but not today. Oil down 27 cents, 65.25. Again, down way below that 77 print a couple weeks ago, and probably lower than where Russia wants it. Russia, I think, likes about a 70 number, but I don't think it's there. Brent down 13 cents, 67.64. Natural gas down 16 cents, 357. Arbub unchanged at 209. Gold down $1.30, 32.86. His goal is, and it was down last week. It's had a big run up, and now it's settling down some. Silver down 22 cents, 35.81. And we've got Bitcoin up 479, 107, 975. I think that if you look at all this stuff as a dollar play, the metals, even though they're high, you know, I think they probably still are okay. I don't know how much further they're going to go. I don't know how much more money they're going to put in. Matt, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:37 a.m. on June 30th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Janeburn Interchange is currently at 29 minutes, outbound at 34. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 33, outbound at 29. Quickly at weather, 75 degrees at O'Hare and 77 at Midway, high of around 90 today, sunny and breezy, likely chance of thunderstorms in the area followed by showers. Tonight, slight chance of thunderstorms and a low of 68. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, extreme heat warning in effect, 89 degrees right now today. The temperature is set to reach 115 degrees. Yeah, a good day to stay home in Phoenix today. Over sports, MLB.
Better not be wearing shorts and touch a metal buckle in your car.
Yeah, that's for sure. You really don't want that. I was actually curious what the hottest day in Phoenix was. It looks like it was in the 90s. It was 122 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, if you can even imagine that, that's insane.
You can actually, when it gets that hot in one of those places, you can actually see the like waves in the air.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
It's brutal. So yeah, good day to stay in the indoors and in the AC today in Phoenix. Let's look at sports real quick. In MLB yesterday, White Sox beat Giants 5-2. Cubs lost to Astros 2-0. Cubs back at home with Guardians on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Sox in LA with the Dodgers. at 9 p.m. as well on Tuesday. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
The Mr. Flanagan with us?
He's indeed.
You,
hey, Jan, how are you?
Right here.
What's the word? We had a branch in Phoenix for a while, we got a lot of clients from out there. And in fact, some of our original clients, because we did a bunch of seminars out there, were from Phoenix. And I've been to I haven't been there in, God, 10, 12 years, but I used to go 3-4 times a year. I used to go to spring training and all that stuff. And I went once in the summer, and it was interesting. I mean, it's a little different than here, in the sense that it does cool down at night, because the humidity is really low. Well, a little higher now that people live there and they have grass and things, but still it's lower, and it gets cooler at night. So if you actually get up early enough, you can go jogging, I'm going to say anywhere between, you got to pull a plug on it about 8:30 or 9. But then that, because they're actually outdoor handball courts there. We, a group of us went out there and we would play those in the morning. But you could make it to about 10, and then you got to scatter inside. Or not inside, but certainly off the handball courts or the jogging track. I mean, the middle of the day is just so oppressive, it's scary. It's as oppressive as like 5 below 0 here in the wintertime. I mean, it really is. It's almost life-threatening.
Visit my aunt and uncle while they were alive, and they got to the point where it was so tough for them that they used to take another house in the summer at Prescott and other places that were, you know, higher up and cooler.
And that's where everybody goes. Yeah, you go further north. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, and you know, it's Phoenix is beautiful, but man, the times I've been out there, and it's other places besides Phoenix too, in California too, that I just can't function. I mean, it's too much.
Yeah, I was reading the worst cities to live in. Number one was in Yuma, Arizona. Yeah, can you imagine?
I've been in Yuma. Yeah, I would agree.
You mean they had the prison was there? Can you imagine being in that prison?
Oh yeah,
I can't even. It's this weekend. Yesterday, for those that don't know, we've had this heat in Chicago, and I don't know if the our weather people here are becoming, politicians in Washington. You can't even get a straight truth out of these guys. Every night they say it's going to get down to 75.
It never does.
Every morning I pull out and the thing on the car says 82, 83. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about, but it's. We got to what, 94 yesterday, 95, something like that. Well, the record was set in 1954, was 97, and since my friend Mr. Flanagan got me all this stuff on the census stuff, I'm thinking that the original house that my parents lived in, where they lived with my aunt, by the way, and her kid, was a bungalow about the same as my small apartment now, with the three bedrooms and the living room, dining room, kitchen. Your typical Chicago bungalow thing. I cannot imagine without any even window units or anything. They didn't have ceiling fans. You might have had a regular fan. How the hell people managed to do that 97 degrees with like double beds? Talk about true love or something, Jen. But the average person was probably 25, 30 pounds lighter. You were used to it. Yeah. I mean, you worked all day in a factory, it was probably hotter. It probably felt cool at home. And people sat on the porch, but, it doesn't help you. It only gets down to 90 at night. But, I mean, you think back about how other people had to live. It's pretty scary.
Well, the Iceman would come every day or every other day.
Yeah.
My mom used to talk about riding on the back of the ice truck. All the kids would invade the truck while the guy was delivering ice. They'd just sit on the big blocks of ice.
Well, my uncle was an ice deliverer, and Saturdays he would shovel coal. This is when he was younger, until he became an engineer. Let's put it this way: you would not arm wrestle this dude. You're talking about carrying blocks of ice. You put them on your shoulder, and you walked up 4 flights of steps, and you stuck them. If you ever see some of these old buildings where it looks like there's a metal opening on the outside, and you say, "What the hell is that for?" Well, the guy didn't come in the house. He opened that and he shoved it in. It was the back end of the ice box, right?
Yeah.
So he shoved it in there and it melted. I guess you must have some kind of a drain to the thing, I would guess. But didn't everybody...
You put a card in the window for how many, block size you wanted or whatever pound was, and you put it up there, and then you didn't have to let the guy into the house. He just, get that size and open the door, put it in, and it was in your icebox at the other side. So,
our buddy, our psychology buddy, Dr. Blade, he's lived in Jamestown, New York, and evidently there was a big lake there. And some people would, in the wintertime, would chip chunks of ice, essentially that size, maybe they cut it, out of the lake, and you'd put it in the barn. And I guess if you insulated enough straw, it would sit there till the middle of summer until you wanted to use it. I didn't know you could insulate something that much, but evidently they did, or maybe it was underground, I don't know. But they would use it in the summertime.
Walden Pond, where, you know, Henry Thoreau built his cabin and lived for a while, that was one of the premier places for getting, you know, ice for that part of suburban Boston. And, you know, they'd store it in these sheds with straw all over the place. And it gets hot in Concord, Massachusetts, as I've discovered. But the ice would last most of the summer. It was quite an elaborate process of, you know, farming it and transporting it and keeping it, you know, in some kind of frozen state. That's what people did.
Yeah, it's so what'd you make of us going through the thing with the Hall of Fame people, not so much as a baseball sort of thing, but in, just as how people can always be contrary through the era, through the ages, huh? No matter who it is.
What impressed me was, you know, how many of them are posthumous.
Yeah.
That, you know, these people weren't honored, were honorable enough during their lifetimes, and then I guess, you know. And there's mistakes that were certainly made. People were overlooked or denied for whatever reason, you know, a place. But it just shows that, you know, you got to sometimes live a long time. You got to live longer than a lifetime to get recognition.
Well, some of it has to do with, as much as I'm not a massive fan of this, was it wins above replacement, Jimmy? How they sort of calculate people against other people in your area and whether or not you're worth more games per year than like an average guy or something. And some of the people they just didn't like Ron Santo was one of them. When all of a sudden they went back and looked at his career, he had a huge WAR. And so, you know, the modern statistics were, I would say, Jimmy, part and parcel of him getting in, weren't they?
Agreed.
And there's other people that are somewhat the same way. And I think Dick Allen benefited from that because nobody liked him because he hated the news people, with, you know, and some of them probably were idiots. Some probably weren't. I mean, I think Dave Parker is sort of the same way. I mean, okay, he had some cocaine issues later in his life. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, unfortunately, have that. I mean, I don't know how that stops you from being in the Hall of Fame, but obviously, a lot of things stop people from being in the Hall of Fame until our president decided to reinstate Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe and a bunch of other people that probably aren't getting in. It's, you know, very, very strange, man, how people, no matter what it is, whether it's a non-profit, whether it's a profit, whether it's politics, you look there and you go, you see all the different stuff going back and forth, and you say, there must be people there. Look how they're screwing it up. And, you know, unless maybe your eyes are on the gallows, then maybe you do things right. What did Winston Churchill say about Americans? They'll eventually do the right thing after they try everything else first. Pretty. So, what do you make of this big, beautiful bill? And now, the one guy who's voting against it's not running again because, you know, what Trump tempted, threatened his second born or something.
Pretty much, it's you know, and Johnson, you know, from Wisconsin, changed his vote at the last minute and voted for it, and that was kind of, I think maybe he saw the light or knew what he was up against. So there's been a lot of, you know, reflection, or, you know, kind of looking at this straight in the eye to figure out where these people stand if they don't go along with this. So that's always been the case with, you know, think back to the Obamacare debate and all that. But these contentious, you know, pieces of legislation that, you know, pretty much pan out on ideological party lines all the time. And, you know, it's kind of what we're condemned to relive over and over again.
Well, I mean, you and I, you know, and even when Richard J. Daley was mayor, he was really good at the subtle use of power. You know, if you didn't bring home your precinct, you know, there might be a new precinct captain in there the next month. I mean, that we all know, right?
Yeah.
But this public bashing to the point where other people know you're doing it and might take matter in their own hands, John, I think this is abominable. I just do. I mean, other people disagree, I know, but I think it's absolutely abominable. because, I mean, look what happened to the people in Minnesota. I mean, how many of those guys are out there? I mean, I think this public abuse coming from the president, you know, I know some people like him and like the Power Party and hate the Democrats, but I don't know how anybody can unless you're, you know, some weirdo just likes people seeing people being abusing other people because you can. Just because you have a
the abuse is clearly too late, Tom. And you know,
what did the guy in Carolina ever say about Trump? I'm talking about abusing people in his own power.
On an individual basis, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that I'm not privy to, and I don't know exactly what's going into, you know, the decisions of who's been disloyal or, you know, how vigorously to support somebody. But the whole climate of the opposition politics is so unbelievably violent and crass and crude and, you know, dismissive of any disagreement, that it's, you know, it's extended all the way through, and it's in local politics now with a vengeance as well. I mean, this is how you have a, you know, a mayor in Chicago with a 6% or 5% approval rating who still thinks he has all the answers. You know, that's likely what, you know, New York is going to get to before they're through. These people are just like unbelievably detached from, you know, what's really going on.
I'm just saying, I would never use the presidential pulpit to abuse a person and say, if you don't vote for my bill, we'll take care of you, or you better be careful. What do you tell the press?
Oh, but that's always been the case, though. It was never conducted in the press.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. At some point, you start telling.
It's always been the case. I mean, always.
So. All right, will nobody rid me of this meddlesome priest? Oh, somebody shot him or somebody killed him?
What's that? What? I'm sorry.
Will nobody rid me of this meddlesome priest? Oh, somebody killed him?
Right. Well, yeah. You got to be careful what you say these days.
I'm saying we have somebody who's not at all careful about what he says, and I have a problem with that. I mean, I just do. I mean, some of the ideas that are flowing through I actually think are pretty good, but this guy has every reason in the world to think this bill sucks. And if he wants to vote against it, he should, even though he's a Republican. And this constant, who's the loyalty? John, the bill's terrible. I mean, Elon Musk, who was this guy's best buddy, was talking about it again this weekend. It's a massive tax break for people who, if you look at what's going on now, maybe it doesn't really. There's a lot of stuff in there that should be in there, and it's not. It's just, I mean, it's not. A lot of these cuts to some of this.
That's the history of legislation, Tom, for the last 100 years.
Okay, well.
So much stuff that shouldn't be in these bills. I can't assign blame, any greater blame, to one side or the other. It's the way the process has become workable, which is, you know, not very workable. But, you know, I don't see that changing. I don't know how to change it. It's, you know. You can't, you know, make people be respectful of political opposition, even if you think about decorum. You know, try to appear to be nice or try to be reasonable or reasoned in your thoughts. That's just, you know, history. You don't do that anymore.
Well, I think that somewhere along the line, we better get back to it, because I don't see a society acting like this forever, where everybody hates everybody. I don't. Because it's a huge weakness. It's a massive weakness. It's funny. I go back and forth, you know, with a lot of people on the web. And now the thing is, everybody is. Well, I don't do the X or any other kind of stuff, but just people from on the show and something. Even economic principles are stuff that is sort of there. Even. You know, the deficits are these people's fault or that people's fault, or, you know, the idea that we would propose continuing tax breaks for people on the upper end at the same time we pass the most regressive tax ever in these tariffs. I look at it, John, from an economic point of view. I'm going, how can we be doing this? It's not a question of which party it is. I'm like, I understand they don't like it, and yet, you know, we do it in such a way where there's people who still think that somebody else is paying the tariffs. I don't know how you get there, but...
I like what's happening with Canada in the last 24 hours.
Why?
They pulled in their horns. So.
But you don't even know... The thing of it is, you're a lot of people are cheering this fight. 2 years ago, did you even know that Canada was an enemy?
Well, nobody ever talked about it. Nobody ever, you know, mentioned the word tariffs except in some kind of, you know, you got the cooties context. So
I did some work on tariffs long before this was over.
Oh yeah, but not in public sphere.
But I mean, we have a guy who will come out and say these tariffs on dairy are killing our people. No, they're not. We have some of the same thing. I mean, nobody ever wants to look at. I guess we're making the bet that nobody will actually do their own research. I mean, the tariffs on dairy are everybody protects their spot, and a lot of these are really kind of quota tariff combos, where at some level you can let a certain amount in, and the tariffs are either non-existent or very low, and then it's over a certain level they get real high, because you want to protect your people to the extent that you at least have a tariff dairy industry. And we do the same thing with timber. We do the same thing with sugar. We do a lot of stuff. I mean, this every country does this, and they do it for reasons. The same reason why I would be very concerned, since we seem to like to have a need, and I don't disagree with that, a war effort and a navy. Well, you better have a steel mill, right? I mean, otherwise, somebody can shut off your navy, right? So I don't have a real problem with protecting to a certain extent the steel industry. I don't have a problem with Japan saying, hey, at the end of the day, even though our farmers aren't as efficient as somebody else, we at least want to have a base level of rice grown here that we can feed people if other people cut us off. I don't have a problem with that, do you? I mean, it's the same thing we do. Same thing with sugar.
But this country was never aggressive in keeping the semblance of a level playing field.
How do you know? Other than that this guy told you that. How do you know?
Well, look at the auto industry, Tom. I mean, you don't have...
There's some people. Some people have had. There's been tariffs to Europe. There's never been an auto tariff to Japan, even though everybody thinks there is. There's never been. They never had a tariff on U.S. autos.
Well, you know, they flooded the market here, and we can't flood their market certainly.
There's reasons they don't want our cars.
Yeah. So, you know, we have to accept all of their cars, and
we're
steel industry offshore too.
I'm saying before people,
we handled this so stupidly in the past.
I'm saying before people have an opinion on somebody just pontificating on this huge tariff thing with somebody else, you got to look and see what the actual numbers are. Now in Europe, when I was over there in 1988, I looked at the cars over there and I couldn't have gotten my Ram Charger down half the streets. Everybody was in a little Volkswagen. What are those ugly little things? They call them student Jags. The things, Citroen, what the hell they call those things?
Citroens?
Yeah, they were with the headlight out in the front. And
yes.
They were made by Citroen. But the Citroen was a real nice car. But this was something else. I mean, it might have been smaller than a Beetle, John, or about the same size. Where if the thing didn't start, you could get your guy behind it and push it, because if you'd pop the clutch and it would start. The things that all, some of those streets, I mean, you couldn't have gotten a SUV down those streets. I mean, a bigger SUV. But anyway, but it's not like and they demanded, people demanded, because gas was three times as expensive. Cars that got a lot more gas. Plus, they let diesels run over there. Nobody had any. We don't want diesels here anymore for some reason. I mean, there were reasons for all this. All I'm saying is before you listen to somebody pontificate once in a while, you should dig into the numbers and find out where they are. I mean, we have somebody talking about how horrible this stuff is with Switzerland. Switzerland doesn't even have any tariffs. So, you know, don't just believe what somebody tells you, especially if the person has had a life as a pathological liar. I mean, it's...
Well, I do believe what Trump said about Energy Star stuff, and we can talk about that if you want. Well, I'll get you a piece. It's from Jeffrey Tucker of the Brownstone Institute. Came out a couple months ago, taking to task all of the so-called energy savings plans that were forced down manufacturers and consumers' throats in the name of saving energy and the planet and every other, you know, beautiful thing. And now what you have are appliances that, in the name of energy savings, run twice as long to cycle through as they used to. And they don't get clothes as clean. They don't get dishes as clean. They don't do anything as efficiently as they say they do, but we're paying more in electric bills to get dirtier clothes and dirtier dishes. So, I mean, the whole Energy Star thing to me has turned into a gigantic scam. I can vouch for this every time I've replaced an appliance. The last dishwasher conked out I had, it was 27 years old. I replaced it with the same manufacturer, same capacity. It's just new. And the first time I ran it, I thought that this thing's got to be busted. It's now running for an hour and a half. And the other one used to cycle through and heat every, dry everything within, you know, 40 to 45 minutes.
I'm not so sure that that's part of the initial concept. If I walk in, because I just talked earlier about electric bills going up, that's one of the reasons why a lot of these restaurants are closed, is utility bills.
But Tom, in my example, the hour and a half cycle was the short cycle.
I am not.
If I wanted, I could have it run for 2 hours, and I don't think my dishes would have been.
I'm not so sure that you can. By the way, as you know, I manage a building with, or I mess around with a building, it has four things and stuff falls apart all the time. I'm very aware, and people will tell you that your water heater, instead of lasting 20 years, is going to last 10. I mean, I'm not so sure that has anything to do with Energy Star. But I'm saying to walk into a store and see five refrigerators lined up, they have that little note that says this one uses $60 a year, this one uses $80, this one's $75. I don't see that as being all that abusive. I really don't. I mean, they're not
it's not accurate at all, Tom.
How do you know?
Well, in my own case, I mean, I haven't used my dishwasher now since I bought it.
I'm not saying the fridge isn't a piece of crap. Nobody's judging that. I mean,
this article by Tucker, I mean, it goes into a lot of other stuff too, like, you know, low volume toilet flushes. You know, people used to put a brick in their toilet tank so that, you know, you weren't filling it with, you know, the water capacity each time to save on water. And now they've got, so, you know, it's extremely low water consumption. But the problem is the sewers that were designed for more flush capacity each time are now, you know, either...
That's what you got rain for.
You don't want rain in your sewer.
Well, we do here in Chicago, we do.
Well, not in my sewer forecast of the street. I'm not flushing it out with rainwater. But it is being flushed out with, you know, toilet flushes and everything else.
I get it, yeah. I understand.
But I mean, none of this stuff is, you know, it's all about some kind of idealized image of what a utopian planet would look like.
If everybody
drove the same type of automobile and nobody made more than X number of dollars a year, all this crazy stuff.
It would
be a nightmare.
I will never argue.
Nightmare with consumer goods and with appliances and stuff. We've been there for a while.
I will never argue that if somebody went into the Energy Star group, that we couldn't. Everything becomes somewhat of a. Businesses do too. Hospitals clearly do. They become somewhat a bloated bureaucracy if given enough time. That doesn't necessarily. It's not that. Whoever runs that thing shouldn't be doing a good job and making sure there's not too many people there, and they shouldn't be doing stuff that make no sense. You're never going to get a disagreement with me on that, on any of that stuff. But the idea that, you know, your president gets somebody filling his ear and the next day wants to get rid of everything, I mean, I think you and I know more about it than he does. I think you do for sure. I mean,
I certainly don't agree with anything every president ever said, nor do I agree with everything that this president says. But about Energy Star, absolutely. It's a racket.
It's a racket. The idea of having ratings on stuff that use power, to me, that makes sense. Now, how you get there, you know, I mean,
I don't believe the rating system, for starters. I think it's a completely corrupt thing, and it's designed to get points. It's designed to get government money. It has nothing to do with pleasing a consumer or getting an end product that's in any way competent.
But you disagree with the fact that when there's two refrigerators standing side by side, assuming they're equal on the other stuff, which I don't think they're judging, if one used $20 less a year or $100 less a year in electric, you wouldn't buy that one?
Well, all I can say is I've never seen it. And I do track this stuff when I can. I've never seen it. I've never seen any kind of savings or any investment I made in any energy.
How would you know?
Because I look at my electric bill.
Well,
it goes more about my consumption.
I've done all the stuff I just mentioned earlier in the show. You probably weren't at that when I first got my electric bill in the apartment, and then I went around and changed all the light bulbs, and I saw the thing go down, and then went right back up again. I mean, what difference does it make for me?
Well, when the rates are not stable. Anyway, how can anybody promise any savings of a dollar amount? Does Commonwealth Edison say
kilowatt hour bill
is going to be the same every month?
You're talking about a population that can't read, John. I mean, Yes, should it say...
And that's how they push
okay,
the
but
energy.
I'm going to say that it's not going to be $60 a year, okay? I get it. We just went through this detail. But what it should say is one uses set on medium. This refrigerator uses X number of kilowatts a year, and the other one uses something else. You're right. It doesn't necessarily... I mean, how can somebody tell me... I'll take your argument to a further degree. How can somebody tell me that a stove uses $40 a year when the cost to deliver the gas to my house if I ever turn the stove on is $50?
No. And, Tom, how can they promise any savings when the appliance itself runs, in my case, twice as long as the former one did? Which one would you say is more energy efficient?
Well, I don't know. Your other one might have been, what was it doing?
Well, it was at least cleaning the dishes, which the new one does not do.
I say
so they never tell you in the fine print. It's all about consumption. They're selling you this beautiful vision of how you're going to save the
planet. My suggestion might be you bought the wrong fridge, or maybe you should wash them yourself.
Well, and I do. That's my compromise. And I think I'm saving a lot of money in the process.
Well, all right.
Like any electricity,
what do you say
except for the hot water heater.
What do you say we shift gears and talk about the markets? And I don't give any, you know, I try not... Well, I don't give any investment advice because, I don't know where the market's going. I learned at an early age. Other people seem to think they do, but I don't think they do. I see what's going on with the money, John. We're pouring money into the system, even though there isn't a day goes by where he doesn't call the... Is the Fed chairman stupid because he's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do, or is he stupid because he's not?
It depends on how he wants to be seen in history or how long he wants to have this job, I guess. I'm not sure.
I'm saying he's pouring money in at a rate that is very inflationary. It's not cutting inflation at all. In anybody's opinion, I will say that I very seldom say something that is absolutely the truth, but that is absolutely the truth. Start talking about 6.5% raise in money supply over a yearly rate. Anybody will tell you that's inflationary, not deflationary. And now the question is, where does it go? Is it going into the market? It appears that way, but I'll just tell you this, John. When things got 2000, 2001, when we got to the premium sort of numbers, now, the thing that was different then is the Fed poured a bunch of money into the system for Y2K because they thought there was going to be this big disaster, which it turned out not to be. And so then they pulled some of the money back. So a lot of the last gasp of the big rally in 2000, in one man's opinion, was the Fed's feeding money in for Y2K and then turning around and pulling it back. Well, now they're not turning around and pulling it back. They're keeping it going. But what I will say is some of the stocks now, the big stocks everybody knows about, the Netflix and the Microsofts and those, so not all of them, by the way. Meta's not near as high, but I don't know if people think Meta's as stable as maybe the other two. But the numbers right now are approaching or exceeding the crazy highs of 2000, 2001 in the main five or six stocks. I mean, I can say categorically. Now, it doesn't mean we're going down. If we keep doing this with the dollar, we could just be starting. I mean, I honestly don't know. But I do know that it's very inflationary. And there's people who have assets that really don't care if the inflation is 10 or 12% on everybody if their stocks or their house goes up 20%, because that's the spot they're in. And when you look at the people that are advantaged by this bill, those are those people. And, you know, if you had somebody who owned assets, certainly who owned real estate, and was still actively doing the business while they were president, I'll give a shot on that, you're going to want the interest rates down 3%, and you're going to want money in the system because it inflates your stuff. Now, is that, maybe Powell in his last gasp should come out and just say exactly what he's doing. I'm inflating the hell out of the place because the president tells me to do it. That's what I'm doing. And maybe there's a time for truth somewhere here, someplace. And what do you make all this? I mean, it obviously is not, we're not fighting inflation. We've now topped the money supply. We went through the COVID top right now. So we're off to the races again. And why do you think we're up 1% every day, for God's sake? I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, unless you have, you know, 1,000 shares of NVIDIA and 10,000 shares of Apple that you didn't tell me about and own five houses, Where do you think this puts you?
Well, it puts me in a bad spot. I mean, I don't have those assets, but I have a pension, and I have, I'm concerned about real estate values, things where my wealth really is tied up. And I'm convinced that this has just been the formula for survival in any of the big economy, to inflate the hell out of the currency. We're not the only one doing it, I mean, certainly.
Yeah, but every other place has done it in history, gone under.
We're right, and we're taking everybody along with us in the process, too. Every advanced country is in the same boat, or worse, maybe per capita.
Which, if you wanted to, you could certainly make the esoteric comment that the same rich people are involved in every of the governments of all the countries we know about. You could certainly make that claim that the same people are pushing Powell around, or pushing Lagarde around, or pushing the guy in the UK around. I think it's a little harder to push the people in UK around.
But they've got, so many other issues of their own that are, what we've got here, but it's accentuated in the UK because it's smaller, it's a more restricted, geographic site, and things are felt more, vividly there, more painfully there than they are here in many cases. But it's every country, and certainly any country in the EU, the expenditures for maintaining the system, what have they got, 720 representatives in the EU?
I had one.
In the European Parliament?
We had one of them on the air one time. God, was he an ass.
What kind of an operation is that? And can anybody justify the expense of maintaining something like that? I mean, everybody's...
How much do they pay those guys?
Too much. I mean, do they need that many of them for starters? But it's that kind of bloat. It's that sort of, the de-emphasization of common sense. It's all about, let's just add, to the mix, and we'll, pay these people whatever we have to get them to serve, and then watch how they completely screw things up for every member economy in the process. So you're paying through the nose to support them, and they're wrecking everything back home. So this to me is a classic thing. It's kind of what the boat that we're in on a more compact basis, because we just have our legislatures and our states that are doing this to us too. But everybody in this country seems to me to be, with a few exceptions, completely broke. I mean, I think Illinois, you can finagle it and, masquerade around it, but, we're broke. The city is broke.
Federal government's broke.
Everything is facing a financial cliff in services, and there's, it isn't like, anybody's really watching where the money is being spent or how it's, allocated or for maintenance down the road or anything else. There's nothing that's, we got money in any kind of a fund to pay for in an emergency. And what do? They look for federal bailouts. And what does the Fed do? They print more money. I don't see it, how this can possibly change.
I think the people who are really running the place and must have an escape thing, or they're building houses in New Zealand or some damn place, because I've never seen, to agree with you that, I'm not supposed to agree with you, but to agree with you is someplace somewhere, wouldn't surprise me at all that there isn't a massive shadow government, that there's that there's five Harold Janines behind the scenes in every country, because this stuff is not sustainable. It is just not sustainable, and no matter what, the upper crust seems to get, I mean, whatever you think of the terrorists and the countries, we can argue about that all day long, but the simple fact is, it is a massive tax increase on the poorest of people. And it's done in a way where the poor people are cheering it because you think they're screwing somebody else. So I guess that's a problem with our educational system. But the fact is, this bill that's going through, why should you pay 35 or 39% and a corporation pay 21%? I mean, ask yourself that. Why? Why should an LLC pay 21% or whatever they pay? I mean, that's insanity. You have a Supreme Court that said, by the way, corporations are people. Well, they're people. Now, I don't think you should be taxed twice. Why don't we have a system where corporations pay the same as everybody else, but if you pay out a dividend, you deduct it? So if you pay out all your profits, you don't pay anything. If the person who gets the check, he pays like anybody else. Why can't we have something that simplicity? The reason why we can't is because the people who are involved want power, because you're going to end up, your shareholders are going to clamor for you to actually send them a check, which they don't now, because you can say, oh man, I'm helping you out by keeping all the money here because you have to pay twice. Well, why do you have to pay twice? You shouldn't have to, right?
Right. Well, think of what we were talking about yesterday, Tom, you and I, about the casino industry in Illinois versus the, you know, retail video poker, you know, the gaming stuff that is state controlled. And, you know, what kind of a state does that to their, you know, you talk about regressive tax. You take advantage of the people who have the least and make them think they can get more by throwing money into a video poker machine that goes to the state. And what kind of
it all goes to the I hope I'm capable of doing the math on the lottery. And I'm dumb enough that if the lottery gets over or daily lotto gets over like $600,000 or $700,000, I'd throw a couple bucks in. Because I know on the one hand they're gonna pay out more that day than they take in that day. But still your odds are horrible. I mean, so I'm capable of doing that, but I can't believe when I walk into some of these areas, and the poorer the neighborhood is, the worst.
Right.
These instant scratch-offs. You know, the highest one for a long time was $35. Now it's $50. $50 for a scratch-off. And it might not even be any... I guess now some states have gone where you can actually trace the games, and they'll actually tell you if any of the winners are still in there. But for a long time, they didn't. But what John and I were talking about is it's almost like the wheel of something where... When I was young, the gambling that was legal was the racetrack. And they had huge crowds. Everybody'd go. I mean, my parents went all the time. My aunt and uncle would live there, for God's sake. My stepfather, we're talking about my stepfather, went every single night of the harness meet at Sportsman's Park one year. And being the accountant that he was, he kept track of every single expense. And by his betting, he was up like $50 on the season, which is pretty damn good, right? I mean, that included the parking, two beers and a hot dog, included all that. The red sheet, the green.
It's not the norm.
No, it's not the norm. And he was very proud of himself. And if you went to a barbershop, wanted to get a bet down, you went early. If you ran outside at 11 o'clock, the Sun Times, it was the green sheet. Remember that?
Yeah.
They had the red sheet. The bet with the green sheet was the turf edition. The back three pages was all about the horses all day long. And then you had the, you could go to, and they even, I don't think they even print the racing form anymore, do they?
I don't think they do.
For those that think how crazy this is, the racing form, it was perforated on top. So nobody could steal a page out of it. So when you got the racing form, the first thing you had to do was run your finger through all the pages on the top and separate the pages so you could open it. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then, well, I mean, so that, then all of a sudden they said, okay, we're going to have, I mean, insider information has been as old as Hector, right? Steinbrenner bought this little racetrack near Chicago called Balmoral Park. And they had a little flats meet, a little thoroughbred meet. They just have a harness meet, John. They might have just had a harness meet. But somehow or another, Steinbrenner's elves found out that all the track owners were going to go to off-track betting. All the track owners were going to get one off-track site. Didn't matter whether you owned Arlington or Balmoral. So Steinberger bought Balmoral so he could have an off-track betting site. And those things were real popular. Nice bars, good food, buffets. I mean, they were pretty cool. Then you go and bet the races here. And then they evolved into New York had a massive off-track betting facility business, didn't they, Jen? And it was all over the place in New York to the point where the off-track had a different pool from the track. So they didn't necessarily keep the track in the loop money-wise. I think the state had a separate pool for the off-track betting, so they were stealing from those guys. When I say those guys, their business. So then this happened, and then all of a sudden we had the lottery. Well, that took a lot of stuff away. And then we had the casinos, and that took stuff away. And it got to the point where they were going to put slot machines in restaurants. First of all, they would never give the racetracks that, like Arlington might run horses 4 months of the year. The rest of the time, it's just sitting there with nice bars in a nice area. They wouldn't let them put the slot machines in there. Yet they allowed the restaurants and bars. If you come in Chicago, you can own most restaurants. Not in the city, but outside the city, there's five or six, you know, video pokers or something. Now those, you would think after the casinos that they would tie it into casino. They're not. The state is essentially the casino for the restaurants. So you got the horse tracks were obliterated by the lotto and the casinos. Then you had the casinos are now being obliterated by the state and the stuff in the restaurants. So God help you if you invest in that industry. And we were talking about, you know, my personal dislike of the president was long before he became president. When that guy opened a place in New Jersey, what happened to him shouldn't have happened to anybody. I mean, as much as I don't like the dude, I don't want him paying how many bazillion dollars in legal fees in this country. I think that's crazy. When he opened a place in New Jersey, New York said, or New Connecticut said, we don't want people going to New Jersey. They opened up the Indian Casino in Connecticut, which I understand, John's the biggest casino in the world, right? The state gets a chunk of the revenue from the slot machines. That doesn't happen here or in Vegas or in Atlantic City. So Trump essentially got put out of business. I'm not saying he ran the place perfectly or anybody else did there. They basically got put out of business by the Indian casinos in Connecticut, right?
Yeah.
And other places. They got a better deal.
Well, it's happened in Wisconsin and other places, too.
And I mean, you see what's happening, and the money just goes from person to person to person. This is really, like, horrible in the government. It happens everywhere. And people, the thing is, Jen, nobody even puts two and two together on this stuff. I mean, the lottery was there to replace the, what they used to call it in the black neighborhoods, the numbers racket.
Yeah.
But then the numbers racket. Was it the mob ran it, or who ran it?
It'll come to me. I mean, I just read a very good scholarly paper about the history of Chicago.
But didn't they pay out 70% and the lotto pays out 40?
Yeah. Plus, I mean, not only
45 or something?
Remember the way it was sold, you know, it would pay for the entire state education system.
Oh, yeah. what a bunch of crap. Like
the toll roads, too.
Yeah, I mean, what a bunch of crap. I mean, you sit there and you wonder what... Who's more gullible, the people saying or the people? I think what happens then is if you stay under a level, and every politician sort of does it. I mean, the Trump phenomenon is a little different because there's such hatred of the Democrats in some areas that no matter what he does is okay. But in general, most people look at something and it's whatever little move you make in government, even if you don't like it. Especially if you got a family and kids and stuff, you know, you got all this stuff to do. It's really not worth taking a week off work in a sandwich sign and walking up and down Michigan Avenue for the average person. So what do you do? The fact is, you do nothing, right? Now you can send out an angry tweet somewhere, which nobody pays any attention to. Or I suppose you could have written a letter to the person, which he's certainly not going to pay. He or she's not going to pay attention to. The point is, you know, when our system of government, what is it really? I mean, what control do you and I have over anything? The answer is none. You know, if somebody gets totally egregious and somehow there's a, you know, something is rolling, yeah. I mean, if somebody were to cut Social Security in half, I think you'd probably get a backlash that no politician would want. And if you put a 5% sales tax on everything, I think you get a backlash that nobody'd want. But now you put a tariff out there and claim the other guys are paying it, and somehow you get away with it until all of a sudden prices go up even more, and people might say, what's causing that, or whatever, right? The question is, which one do you fight? John, you know, it's funny. When I was on the board of the SIBO, there was stuff that was going down, but you had to really pick your battles. And even if you won a couple of them, which took a lot of personal stuff to do, you lost 10. You didn't know if you were gaining on anything. This guy in Carolina, he's be happier than a hamster to be out of the Senate next year. He said he wants to be a guy that can be in the middle and, depending on the bill, vote one way or the other and not just have to be in line with his people or get threatened. You know, and he says, I don't want to do that. And it's hard for people to do that anymore, and I'm not going to do it anymore. I don't even know the guy, but to me that's sort of a miss. The guy here in Chicago... Actually, like the Republican guy Fitzgerald, he was in there 6 years. He goes, I've had enough. I don't know that we want those people necessarily out of the Senate, do we?
No, but it's going to be harder to keep them or people like that in the Senate, right? Or any other legislative body. Just to kind of sign off on the casino and the state's involvement and so on. To me, it's just reprehensible that you got, you know, a blue state here, blue county, blue city management, and what do they really think of people, especially people who, you know, from what I can see, the ones who use the video poker games are people who really need every last cent they have. They're just kind of the way they're dressed, the, you know, what they do.
Well, Jan, you know, who do you think buys the scratch-offs?
Well, it's the same.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, we got these, you know, this industry to prey on those very people. Just, you know, targeted advertising all over the place. For the lotto, and now you all of a sudden you go walk into a store and you say, oh, here's a fleet of video poker games. I'm going to shop, you know, more often here. It takes advantage of people's hunger and, you know, inability to, you know, get money by any other legal means, apparently. And I guess maybe it's better to have them use a video poker game in the hopes they get money, they go out and hold up a bank or something. But then, you know, those people become, you know, so victimized by having their money taken from them and not having any kind of return for it, that they become wards of the state, pretty much. And this is kind of the growth industry that Illinois has clearly invested in. They want you at every step of the way.
Well, every state is. Yeah, drive. If you want to see something sad, John, I will never drive that way again. If you drive across Oklahoma, I think it's I-40, used to be 66, right? You see one Indian casino after another, and they're nothing but baller buildings. You know, the things with the big rounded buildings and whatnot. There's a few that are nicer, and that's all they have. And I'm like, what in God's name? You know it stuns me, and I don't really, you know, the opinions, people can have their own opinions, but I don't see how, Jan, you know, we're not young anymore. Neither is Jimmy. You know, Matt Byrne is. When we first started going to school, you know, it really started with the GI Bill. I mean, that was the single biggest move from the middle class or lower class up was the GI Bill. I mean, I don't think anybody could debate that point. A lot of people probably don't know what the GI Bill was, but I would have, by this stage, I mean, you know, in our high school, people were taking economics, and if you even went to junior college, I mean, to this stage, I am absolutely stunned that if I say something like, man, the lottery is like a really serious regressive tax on the people. If there's eight people at the table, Jen, seven of them look at me like I have two heads. They have no idea what I'm talking about. How could we collectively, not individually, how could we collectively be that uneducated? How do people not know? How does everybody not recognize what tariffs are? I'm not saying they're a bad idea if somebody's screwing us or anything. I'm saying, how does anybody not recognize who pays them and what they are? Or the video poker.
That was the downside of the GI Bill, unfortunately. That and, you know, student deferments during Vietnam, because it dissipated, you know, the importance of the college education from whatever it had been. It was often an elite country club atmosphere at many institutions that were masquerading as, you know, scholarly institutions. But after the GI Bill and after, you know, Vietnam, I think college became an unrecognizable thing. And it's still being billed as, you know, college for everyone, college free of charge for everyone. If you think college isn't teaching anything now, wait till it's free. It's not going to teach anything.
Well, I mean, it was damn near free for us. And I don't know.
We were kind of in the afterburner stage, I think, where there were still, there was the old guard of faculty, the old guard running the institutions, you know, certainly on their way out, and what's replaced them, and there's a lot of institutions that don't exist anymore, too, and it's a survival gig now, where you got to ramp up enrollment, you got to do what you can to keep people happy and keep them paying the bills, which means requiring less of them, and less rigorous, you know, activities. So we now have, you know, we can boast about college numbers, which are still declining from the last table I looked at, but that doesn't even tell the whole story, because the people coming out fully credentialed are nowhere near prepared to do anything of much value to the nation, the economy. So,
well, I think that sort of starts in the high school, but anyway, we only got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it does.
We got a couple of minutes, and we have Nancy coming on.
But I can't stick around for today, unfortunately, for the last half hour time. So,
well, I just want to ask you real quick. Maybe we'll run over a minute, and then we have a short break. What is the deal with this Lincoln Yards? And for those that don't know, Chicago has an area by me that, and you can't go through the whole story today, but I don't know how they decided this was going to be this huge development, and these outfits, Sterling Bay, somehow got their hair up somebody's behind the city. Now, who the hell they paid, I don't even know who that was. They ended up saying, we're going to do this whole thing. And I'm not sure, John, they ever really had a massive plan that everybody approved on or anything. But they condemned, and a lot of the place was, some of it was vacant. Some of it was the old General Lyon facility. But they, I think they condemned a lot of property, like, you know, the Hennepin Wrecking was over there. And those places all moved.
Finkelsteel moved out.
Well, but they were going to move anyway. They already, that was probably the thing that started it all. But they were going to eat from the neighborhood for pollution, and they needed more room because they're a very ongoing business. But anyway, those guys, now, what kind of deal did Hennepin Wrecking get? A real price for their place, or was it condemned? Anyway, these guys ended up with all this property over a period of 5 years, yeah? Six?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, now they don't have any dough. they got an office building over there that's three quarters done. Nobody's in it. Nobody's working on it. And that's it. Now what?
Well, and I have to dig a little deeper into what else they were, you know, involved in or became involved in after this. You know, deal was handed to them. But, you know, the original agreement with the city was, and this is probably a smart thing on the part of the city for once, is that Sterling Bay would front the money for all the infrastructure improvements that needed to be made. So that would be, you know, the water, sewer, utility, roads, everything. And then the city would reimburse Sterling Bay at the end of the, you know, construction based on certification that it was done according to the plans. And whatever happened to Sterling Bay, they didn't have that money to throw around into the infrastructure, and you know their lenders pulled the plug and have taken over the property. So I suspect it's part of a bigger collapse or problem Sterling Bay faced elsewhere, because this wasn't the only deal they
had.
Well,
it's a really simple question, and then you got to dash and Nancy will be on, but if I talk to city, you or I, because you're the attorney, you'd have to be talking, if I talk to city into condemning Jimmy Lawler's house and his 5 acres in the city, because he's the only guy with 5 acres left, and they're condemning that for whatever, a Walmart or a high rise, and they, you know, they give Jimmy supposedly a decent price, whether it is or it isn't, who knows, and he says, well, nobody wants me here, and he's out of there, and I get it for this pretty good price, and all of a sudden I run out of dough. Do I get to turn around and sell it for the real price and make the money, or I got to give it back to the city because I didn't do what I was supposed to do?
I think it's the latter.
I mean, do you think this property is going to get forwarded back to somebody?
Yeah. So the lenders are going to have to now try to dispose of it. And you know, there's a history of this downtown with the Michael Reese Hospital project. You know, well, for the Olympics.
Block 48, whatever that thing was.
It was Block 37 downtown. That went on for 10 years. Finally, it got built, but I don't think the building is more than 20 or 30%. Leaf right now.
Oh yeah, man. Well, let's kick this around next week, because it's pretty fascinating stuff about how sometimes I think it probably works in some cities, and maybe here it works for somebody. Let's put it that way. Matt, were you at it? Market's up 22. Nancy Fears up 126. Nothing's really moved. Want to go right to Nancy?
Sounds good.
Hey, Nance, how are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. We're talking about condemnations and what if it doesn't work? Who gets the property and who gets to do stuff? And that's a what a whole field of real estate and legal stuff is that, eh?
It sure is.
My buddies used to tell me that the guy died young with like nine or ten kids. Guy was one of the most successful attorneys in the whole state, or maybe the country. Used to do all the condemnation proceedings for the Tri-State Tollway.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, and how many times do they need more space? Because they seem like they're widening the thing every year, right? So every time you do it, and you take 50 feet from everybody's house for 40 miles, you got to negotiate with every person, right?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, if that's, look at what's happening by you. As my uncle used to say, what are you from, Louisiana? How are things by you? The 143rd Street, they decided to widen that. They take a chunk of everybody's property there. They got to pay every person, right? Every one of them is a separate condemnation.
143. I thought they took eminent domain on that.
That's what I'm saying. But you have to. You condemn it using an eminent domain, but you have to pay people.
I thought they...
Oh, no. You got to pay people.
You have to pay people. Okay.
It's their property.
Yeah.
Well, I get that. I get it's their property, but I thought it was at some ridiculously crazy low price.
One of the guys who... I won't go into it. He's not a pal anymore, but he worked with me in Nancy Sheehan's campaign, and he worked... He had the seat in the basement of the county building where every condemnation in the whole county went across his desk.
Okay.
And he said, if you were going to widen, the example he used was Irving Park Road, where you got to take 50 feet from everybody on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
He said, they'll lob out a number. and the number might be, Nancy's hair salon or something, or real estate, or whatever, mortgage place. They're going to say, we're going to give you, $8,000 for your 50 feet. You might be 100 feet wide or 200 feet wide, and everybody's going to get that letter. Then there are attorneys that specialize in this, are huge at it. They say, Nancy, how about giving me that letter? They want to give you $50,000 or whatever it is, and we think we can get more. And by the way, it's not going to cost you a dime. We'll just take 20 or 40% of whatever else we get. So if it's Nancy's hairdresser, you might not even know that you're going to go from 30 parking places to 20. And they're going to say, okay, only 20 people can park here. You're going to lose a third of your business. And this $50,000 is an outrage. It better be $200,000. And they are successful. They're pretty good at what they do. They bring hard facts to the table. And they say, this is costing this lady $150,000 or $200,000, not 50. And you guys might settle at 100, in which case they're going to get, 30% of that or 25, whatever the fee is, and you're going to get more. The interesting part is the person next door never gets the idea that you got more. They have no idea that they're dumb enough to take their 50, they get 50.
So they don't get anything else?
No, they don't get more because you got more. Every single person has to fight their own battle.
Oh,
yeah, it's a little carve out of the because we're always doing that stuff here, right? Widening streets and everything. I mean, everybody sort of is, and those guys that do that, they say, give me the letter. It's sort of like a tax assessment. Only it's everyone right in a row, and if everybody they'll fight everyone and whatever they get and if they win two or three or four, then the government caves on some of the rest. It's a whole part of, it's a whole branch of law and a whole area of money that unless somebody tells you about it, you never even know existed.
Oh my God! So someone told you about this?
Oh yeah. I used to drink with the guy every week after we had one of the meetings for the stuff. So yeah, it's attorney firms. That's all they do. It's the flip side of the guy from the Tri-State Tollway. He was in charge of giving out the numbers and fighting the battle for the Tri-State Tollway when people said they wanted more. There's people on both sides, and they go to court and off they go.
What happened that everybody bought those bonds for the tollway, and then all these years have gone by, they've never ended the tolls. I'm sure the debt is paid off.
Well, no, they keep getting more debt because they keep expanding it.
They keep expanding.
Well, I mean, it's okay. How many...
So every time they widen it, they take out a new...
Sure,
bond.
Absolutely. For those that don't know what we're talking about, the Tri-State Tollway was originally built in the 50s. Because to get to Arlington Park Racetrack before there was a tollway was a day-long deal. Farm stand, a whole bit. You're going up on 12 and 20 to 53. I mean, it was really quite the deal. But then the Tri-State was built. Now, Chicago... If you come around the lake, that's why it was this railroad center of the world, you had to come through Chicago. Same way if you're driving. If you're driving anywhere from Michigan or any place to Seattle, you got to come through Chicago. You got to come around the bottom of the lake. So they put, the Tri-State was one of the first, they call them circumferentials. How's that for a term, Nance?
That is a mouthful term.
Yeah, because if you go down by Indianapolis, you'll see like a road, an interstate that goes right through the place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's one that goes all the way around it, right? Same way with Columbus, same way with Atlanta, same way with all these cities. You can either go through or you can go around. Well, Chicago, since one side's the lake, the Tri-State just spins around like a new moon, right? It just goes around the city. Well, they decided, okay, we're going to make this a toll road. Maybe it was even, the idea might have been for the interstate system, but so they start to build it, they put out bonds, and they said, we're going to pay for it on the tolls. By the way, in 15 years or 20 years, there's not going to be any tolls, the bonds are going to be paid off. Well, the thing, I used to drive it, the Allied Van Lines, my first job, it was two lanes in each direction. It looked like...
That's all it was?
Yeah, that's all it was. Two lanes in each direction. And they said, oh, this ain't going to cut it. So then the tolls, instead of stopping, actually went up. Well, now, guess what? We need three lanes in each direction. And then we got to buy more property for that, right? So the thing's got to be from Indiana to, well, damn near Wisconsin. It doesn't quite go to Wisconsin, does it? How many pieces of property do you think that is? 50,000? you got to get land from. That takes a while. And as soon as you're done with the three lanes, what are we up to now? Five lanes?
And well, it is going up to five lanes. I don't ever remember it being two lanes.
Well, that's because you're young, Nance. You're 25. What can I tell you?
Well, I mean, as a little kid, we used to get on it. My mother thought it was so dangerous. And it was three lanes on each side, I think.
It went to three lanes. They were doing that while I was working in Allied Van Lines. They were going to three. Yeah, they're going to three. But then it went to four. We're six in some spots, aren't we? We're up to, I mean, and every time you do this, every bridge across it is now too short, right? You got to replace the bridge. But it's a massive undertaking. It's a massive undertaking.
I don't remember ever being, I mean, that small, but like you're saying, maybe it was just before my time.
Yeah, a little bit. It wasn't two lanes very long. But then they immediately said, this is crazy. Yeah, but so what's going on in your world? What's with the
mortgages? Are you know? I mean, I'm getting some, and it's busier than what it was. But I just think it's because of the some people just have to make the move. I believe that people want to be make the move right now because it's this. You know, people are switching schools and you know doing that kind of thing. And then I don't know what will happen after that. I would imagine this is going to be the new norm.
Most
people still say, I can't leave. I'm not giving up my 3% mortgage. And that's viable thinking in my mind.
Well, it's kind of the mirror image. Remember in 2007, 2008, where people bought homes and then the value of the home went down.
Down, they devalued. Yes, they
where,
did.
Where you and really then, you couldn't move because nobody had a down payment anymore.
Well, you couldn't move because nobody could bring money to closing to get out of it.
Well, either that or if you were lucky and you were just if you bought the place for $250 and you put $50 down and you could sell it for $200, the only loser there was you, right?
Right, correct.
But those people, nobody. It wasn't a problem. Well, it was a problem, but until everybody started getting laid off. And then all of a sudden you had to move. Now, we're starting to see a little bit the labor market. I won't say it's tanking here, but it's not as strong as it was, and we're starting to see some layoffs the last few months in a lot of industries.
Are you seeing layoffs, Tom? Because I haven't seen that part yet.
I'm saying we haven't seen them here. That's what I'm trying to say. Carl was noticing them in the last... A lot of them are in the area of college educated and higher.
That's really going to slow things down then. I missed that part, but it might just start
a little and stay there. It might not get any worse, but I guess the only reason it really shook people is okay, I'm laid off and now I have a job in Tulsa and I got to puke this place out, which I don't want to. I'd rather sit here and let the value come back up, which it has. But they couldn't do that, right? They had to move. So now it's sort of the same thing with the 3% mortgages. I'm okay as long as I can stay here and as long as I stay employed. I mean, in Orland, Orland, Tinley, and you do mortgages a lot of places other than that, I know, but generally that area has been pretty safe. There's not one or two big employers there that everybody keeps their eye on nervously, right? So
No, there's not. Is downtown coming back?
You know, it depends on who you listen to. Coming back from it's coming. It's better than it was when it was really bad. But the I was trying to get John to talk about it today, but we ran out of time. Another two buildings down here hit the crap hole. The 311, right, Jimmy? The White Castle building, Nance? That one, I think, just went to somebody at... Now, that's a problem with that building. It's kind of weirdly designed to where you go in. When I say weirdly designed, you know, I like a car without any of the gadgets on it. I also like a building where I just be able to walk in, get in the elevator, and get to my floor. I don't want escalator to an elevator to another spot, another escalator. You know, decisions made, they call it, how many decisions do you have to make to get to your office? I mean,
I've never heard that, but you're right.
The worst city, like, in, I don't know about the world, is the Sears Tower. Well, now the Willis Tower. If your office is like the 65th floor, you might have to switch escalator to elevator like 2-3 times to get there.
Because
you're kidding me.
Yeah.
That's because, Chief, the elevators can only go up so many floors.
Well, they have a couple to go all the way, but they're real expensive.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying, this 311 building is sort of like that, right, Jimmy? It's, you walk in, and I think, you got to take an escalator up. Or you just, but it's a building that never has really worked since day one. Talk about a scam.
Well, you think that's bad. I mean, I used to work for Harris Bank. The original Harris Bank building actually is three different buildings. And you want to talk about crazy. There are times that you have to go down escalators, go through the lobby, go up another set of elevators, cut across the floor to get another set of elevators to go into the other building.
Whoa.
It was a puzzle? Yeah.
At least they were different buildings, you know.
Originally, yes. The original building was the one in the middle. And
the big stone job that looked like a bank.
Correct. That is the original Harris Bank building. The other two buildings, they purchased along the way, and then, but never really combined all three buildings to make it easy to go from one to the other. And it doesn't. They have sold the building. I think they now, BMO leases the building. But it was crazy because no one thought at one point in time as how to go from one side of the building to the next without going through hoops.
Well, the 311, Jimmy, you might know this, but one of my attorney buddies kind of worked on the place. I don't know who he represented, but the deal is, and guys kick me, you know more about this than me, if you're going to go build a building, you get construction financing, right? And then you have to get it a certain amount leased to kick it to the full, the regular financing, right, or something like that? Some bizarre.
Not necessarily. I mean, but it you're in. I mean, you're definitely in the right place.
This one, you sort of had to do that. So they build a place. Not only when you walk in, it's not that tall. It's still these decisions to be made to get you to your place. So it's kind of, I was in there twice, and I'm like, I could be in this building. But what they did, according to my buddy, is they had the place 60% or 70% leased to kick it to the new loan or the new owner or something. So they brought all these firms in there. I think a lot of them were law firms. And they gave people like 10-year leases where they didn't have to pay anything for like the first 2.5 years or 2 years or something. So they ended up kicking it to the next loan, and there was no rent, even though it was leased. They weren't getting anything. So there was, but technically it was leased. But nobody was going to pay for like a year or two. And they did all this, you know, and they put all the, you know, build outs of the office. And, you know, whenever you have a law firm, you always have these incredible amounts of files that are built into the walls and stuff. They did all that stuff. And then there was a big lawsuit over, you know, you're screwing me because this isn't really leased. I'm not getting a check. And I don't know how that all, but that thing has been a troubled building since like day one. So then they were going to wreck it like 6 months ago, Jimmy, we were talking about it. The cost to wreck it was more than the cost, like, to sell it to somebody or something. It's bizarre.
Wow.
See, Nance, you need to come back in the city and get a little of this intrigue.
Yeah, really, I need an education, guys.
Yeah, you need a little, you know, this is a little intrigue. Everybody doing whatever they can, back and forth. But, yeah, hopefully it'll be a big carnage if all of a sudden a lot of people are forced to give up these 3% loans. Because I don't think most people can do it, especially if you're losing your job, right, Nance?
No, if you lose your job, that's a big qualifier that you're very happy that what you got.
Well, it's not a big deal if you get another job in Chicago within 2 months or something. It's not a big deal, but it is for the 2 months. But if all of a sudden you go, there's no jobs here, I got to go to, you know, whatever, Austin, Texas or someplace, well, now you got a problem, right? You not only have, in these companies, if you get a job somewhere else, I can remember if they hired somebody, God, they paid for the move, they'd buy your house or they do something. Does anybody do that anymore?
No. Relocation, no. I've seen that in a
It depends, time. Actually, Nancy, depends. The higher you up,
well,
I know.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying the average guy, no.
No, the average, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I remember they came in and packed up the whole house and all of that, but now they don't really, that's not even really on the table. But the higher ups, absolutely, anybody higher up, yes. But
well, at Pullman they had a deal, this is how they treated, they felt middle class people were, Nance. You know, ladies like you, okay, which were always going to do a lot of stuff themselves, they would come in and they would pay for the move.
Mm-hmm.
They would pay for, you know, whatever. I think they would either buy the house or make sure they got an appraisal and whatever it was, but you were made whole on the house. They made the move, and they knew that most middle-class ladies, I'd say the ladies are usually in charge of this stuff, would always be too embarrassed to put all their expenses through.
Mm-hmm.
So they would give the person a month's pay, and they called it drapery cleaning. Because they knew the lady would never put all the expenses down in there because she felt she should do some of the stuff herself. So they would give essentially a month's pay bonus just because, you know, somebody like you or Rod would say, I didn't get the drapes cleaned anyway, I'm not going to charge them for that. That's why they called it drapery cleaning bonus, and they'd give you a month's pay.
I didn't know that.
And the thing that pissed me off the most was they moved a guy to be the chairman. The guy was named Clark Lachlan or something. The original chairman when I went to Pullman was McDivitt, the astronaut. And he retired, and this guy, they brought this guy in from Texas. But he only was going to be here 2 years. So he didn't buy a house. But okay, they moved into an apartment. And they moved him into this apartment. Pullman was going to pay for the apartment and his cleaning expenses and the maid and the whole bit. And still he demanded his month's pay. And I'm sitting there going, well, that sucks. little did I know that 50 years later, 40 years later, what people that are in charge of companies are going to demand, right, and get it. And here I was pissed off at this guy because, wait a minute, there is no drapery cleaning because you had it all. You're renting a fully furnished apartment. And by the way, we're paying the whole nut. You don't need your month. Plus, the guy was making $250,000 a year, which is a lot of money in those days. So my outrage, can you imagine what it is now, Nance?
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Little tidbits of history. So, but right now, do you have to? Is Fannie and Freddie? What are jumbos up to? Jimmy and I were talking about jumbos the other day.
You know what? I haven't had one, so I really can't honestly answer that question. Because I think the loan limits in Cook right now are 800 and something, 811.
Oh, so they're up there. So they're up there.
Oh yeah, they're up there so high that it doesn't really. Nobody's really getting anything. it used to be it was, you know, 400, 390, something like that. But no, they're so high now, it's kind of crazy.
Well, Audrey's got a couple of listings that are in the mid, you know, between 1 and 2 mil. Who knows what they're going to sell for? But if they are, you know, the people that have wandered through and looked at it, because you've helped her with a couple of the open houses.
Yeah, they all want to pay cash.
They all want to pay cash. But what if they didn't? What if somebody?
But you know, it's no problem. I mean, 30-year probably like for the 800 right now with good credit would probably be in the high sixes.
Okay, so
not bad, not horrible.
And Fannie will take that.
Fannie will take it. Yeah, Fannie and Freddie will take that.
What if the guy wants a loan for $1.5 million? Then what happens?
If that is. Fannie and Freddie don't take those, so it's all privatized money that's going to pick it up.
So it's like a private Fannie and Freddie.
Now the bank or the lender picks it up.
It's a pool. It's a pool. Well, I would say Wall Street picks it up because they make pools, and then they're the ones that really get into it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Being in the servicing, I can tell you on loans like that, generally the bank will pick it up, hold it for a while, and then sells it into a pool to Wall Street or to private equity, and then they pick it up.
Right. That's correct.
And then the bank gets paid to service it.
Yes.
Banks don't service it. They go out to servicings like my former employer. That's what they do. I mean, they used to do the servicing, but a lot of the banks don't do it anymore. It's just not profitable for them.
Really? Even in loans of that size?
Even loans of that size, because you only are making so much on it. Really, the profitable one is the one who holds the note. They're the ones making the money, not the servicer. The servicer only gets like a point, maybe a half a point on the servicing contract. They don't make that. It's not that much.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Lance.
I have to ask, since you're in servicing, there's basically almost like nobody really in it that much anymore. I mean, as far as none of the banks are doing it.
No, you are right on that, Nancy. Right now, one of the biggest servicers is, not surprising, is Rocket Mortgage. They're now going into the servicing their own loans, and then the trick is at some point they package them up and securitize them and sell the loans on the open market.
Okay, but
it is odd. Banks.
Where do they make their money then? Because there isn't there's no money really that in servicing. Or where did servicing make their money? Maybe is the question.
Well, in my former employer, we did what was called non-performing loans. So you pay a premium. You pay a premium for that. Now that you have performing loans, it's much more competitive. But you are right in the sense that there are only about 6-7 servicers out there now. A couple of banks still do it, but none of the majors do it anymore. It's just not profitable, so they don't do it. So they are sitting around, and the thing is the selling of the loans is what it is. The servicers, the idea is, like Rocket, I'm going to get it. I'm going to then, at some point, you're going to want to refinance, or you're going to come to me. I'll make the money down the road on ancillary, either refinancing it, marketing it, because they own Redfin. You know, you're going to sell your, I can sell your house, and my former company does the same. They have a realtor company. They have a mortgage company. They will help you sell a loan. And then thing is to get a bunch of investors that will buy and sell loans but won't change the servicing.
When you say you sell the loans, you don't always sell them at the price that you got them,
no.
Right?
No, they're always discounted.
Well, I mean, that kind of not. Nancy, I don't know if I ever told you this story. It was a potential client calls me, and he's way the hell out, God knows where. So I said, how about if I do a house call and we meet in the middle? So we meet in Schaumburg at this Panera Bread. I've never been to one of those places. And the guy brings his wife, right? Which is fine. And it's great, because then you don't have to, if you tell somebody what you do, well, you don't want. You never want somebody else to sell your product. You learn to do it yourself, right? I mean, it's
right.
So the guy's wife is, let's just say, unusually attractive, Nance, and not that I noticed. And, you know, we're sitting there, we're talking about the market, and then I said, you know, what do you do? She goes, well, I just got fired. This is before 2007. I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. What did this lady do where somebody would fire her? I mean, you shouldn't think that way, but of course I immediately thought that way. She goes, I was in this mortgage business, and we were doing exceptionally well, and I'd go out for these mortgages, and, you know, we'd close them, and we had the appraiser basically told me they stole money everywhere along the line, right? and do the closings for people when everybody's, you know, buying everything. And she goes, we would package them up, and somebody would come and buy the loans at 106% of value. And I go, they were doing what? Because you guys are talking about stuff being going at a discount. They were all going at a premium. Because that was, you know, when everybody was putting these mortgages in these pools and selling them to people who were borrowing the money from Japan, right? That's what caused all the 2008 fiasco. She goes, yeah, we'd put together $1 million worth of loans, and they were good loans. They were in, like, Northbrook and places like that. Guys would come, and they'd pay $1.6 million for them. And they'd sell them to somebody else, and finally they'd go into, you know, some pool at Goldman Sachs or someplace, and off they'd go. I was absolutely flabbergasted that somebody would come in and pay premium. But I guess, why not? You pay premium for a bond if the interest rate goes down, right?
Right.
Or goes up. I mean, have you ever heard of that?
I mean, I've always seen them go for a discount. Always. But yeah. I think 2007, 2008, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on where people were cheating. I don't understand how they got there, but only because I wasn't involved in it, I didn't see how it worked.
Well, they'd say, here, we got $1 million worth of good loans at 6%. Well, the market rate is, it's now 6.2. By the way, we'll pay you some more. Right? I mean, it's a crazy bit. So the last 10 loans you did, or are they revised, divorces, new people? What are they?
Let's see. Three are purchases.
Really?
Three are purchases, yeah. And the rest are, I've got two refis going. They're not divorces. They just need... both houses, really, honestly and truthfully, they need new roofs or new windows, bigger ticket items. And those ticket items are huge. One house, all the windows for this whole house is $160,000.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, so I said I would just maybe not replace them all at once. I mean, pick the worst, do them first, then make a plan, and don't get rid of your rate. Just make a plan and get them done. I don't know. They don't want to do that. They just want to replace them and get it over with. But how do you put $160,000 into your house and then, if you have to sell it, you're going to take a big loss because, you know what I'm saying? I mean, a window's a window, right? My husband used to say a door is a door. It doesn't matter that the door is ugly.
it's
a door.
Well, I know I've been, screwing around with this, my place, and I've eventually replaced the, I'm going to say, 2/3 of the windows, and the rest of them could work. I got a bid for the ones on the second floor, and they were like twice as much as I paid 5 years ago.
It's sad.
I've got guys that bring. There's a place on. Remember the place that was on Goose Island where they closed it down, and Jesse Jackson was having the big issue with the owner closing it down, and blah blah blah, and there was a big boycott. And those guys all moved to, I think it's 39th and Kedzie or someplace. If you bring the measurements over there, they'll make you windows. And it's all the same people, and they're really nice people, and they do a really good job. But you got to bring them the window, and they'll make it for you, and and then you got to bring it over. You go pick it up, throw it in the back of the Suburban, and then you got to get guys that'll put them in. Well, I got guys, but I was getting stuff done for half the cost of the guys that are on TV. Of course, these guys didn't do any commercials. And the last time I went, I think the just for the picture window and stuff for the second floor, they wanted, like $2,000. And I'm going, $2,000? It was like $1,100 2 years ago. Plus, you got to pay the guys to put it in. But I'm going to say that if I went to a regular place, it'd be $10,000. Easy. I don't know if they do a good job.
Boy, I just can't believe the cost of windows and roofs right now.
Well, roofs are crazed. I mean, some of the people in that area where Audrey is, they got the hail damage. I mean, I talked to a couple of neighbors, $80,000, $90,000. I'm like, you mean for the whole house? And they're like, no, for the roof. That's what's crazy about this inflation, Nance. I mean, it's people. God, if I have one more person tell me, I went to the store and I looked at my gas, buddy, it's a slice of the inflation. It's a small slice. It's the part that you don't get. It's the vet bill that you don't have yet. It's the emergency room visit you don't have yet. The window you don't need. You need to replace. it's hovering that where people don't even see it, right, Nancy?
That is true. I agree. I agree with you 100%.
I don't have enough. I'm not away from the house too long to have a pooch, even though I'd love to have a dog. I don't know if I'd get one now because of the vet bills. For God's sake. I mean, what if the poor guy has to get an operation? $5,000-$10,000?
Right now, considering I have three.
I know, but the little one's fine, though. He's nice and quiet.
Oh, nice and quiet. He's like a terror.
We have to ask Nance on the radio. Who picked that dog? You didn't bring Audrey with you, did you?
Oh my God, no! The breeder called me and said I have my breeds are too big, and you know I have this dog available. And I gave it to you for the same price as you bought 8 years ago. So I was like, oh, okay.
You didn't realize that a discount dog.
I didn't realize that I was getting terrorized. No, I didn't realize that.
He's the cutest little thing, but he is busy.
He is like speed lightning. He got out yesterday. Oh my God. They were putting in a fence next door. And he got out, and nobody could believe how fast he could run. The workers were running after him. They finally got him cornered. He jumped over them. If I wouldn't live on such a busy street, it would have been like a perfect Laurel and her Three Stooges moment. Cars were sizing the street, stopping cars. They're like, he's over there. I said, that's okay. I'll be here in a minute. He runs
unbelievable. And then it becomes a game. You know, you got to be careful on that. But anyway, Nance, give everybody a shameless plug. How do I find you?
You can call me at 708-341-9601. Or you can just call Tom.
Wait, what?
He can just call you.
Well, everybody knows how to find me.
That's what I'm saying.
Definitely could call me, and I'll get in touch with Nance and Audrey. I honestly think that when people use the combination of Nancy and Audrey, it's about as professional a unit as I've ever seen. You guys, much as I don't mind giving you crap, you guys are the best. I mean,
you know what? People come back. I mean, I heard from somebody yesterday that I met like 15 years ago. I mean, they call. They want advice. They say, "What do you think?" And then if I'm stuck with should they, you know, stay or sell or what is their house worth, then Aud gets involved. It's people are like, you two are hilarious. And it's not hilarious. It's just we discuss everything from soup to nuts to make sure we've got it all covered. It doesn't just go undone.
How many words per day do you think you guys share? 1 million?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a clue. Not a clue on that one.
Anyway, thanks.
Stories, I mean, like the people yesterday, the workers, they were, even though they only spoke Spanish, they were out in English yelling, screaming. I mean, it was hilarious. And we all got back in the backyard and we were like, give me that dog.
Put him in a house, tie him up, put him in a cage. But I know
were hilarious. Nobody else to see him after that.
Well, I know the one listing Aud has in the really not outside her area, it's a bigger, way more expensive area. And I know you helped her with it. The stuff you guys put together, the drone pictures and all the other stuff, I'm looking at this going, God, this is really sweet. The people who own the place are looking at it and go, that's our house? It was like,
I know, it's bizarre. And the virtual staging, that's another thing. But it's just where we take all the furniture out that's in there, and then we just put in what is much more in style now. And so people have an idea what it's going to look like. And then when they get there, they're like, well, this furniture wasn't in the picture. No, it wasn't in the picture, but that's what you can do with this.
By the way, can I have it? No, it's got to go back.
Virtual staging is just where you wipe everything out on film, and then you place the pieces in. It's really not there.
Well, you know, the Aud watches those crazy shows where they show people like selling houses in L.A. for like $30 million. They actually move all the furniture out and move all new stuff in.
Correct. That's full staging. We're just doing virtual.
That's pretty serious stuff. Property. I mean, I don't know what the God knows what that costs, but
yeah.
Anyway, Nance, take care of yourself. SBP is up 21. Okay. Nancy V is up 122. Matt, nice job. Jimmy, thank you as always. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious.
and don't call me Shirley.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit jetblue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.